the speaker would just come up and begin to address you guys, but it's not every day that you get the opportunity to introduce your own brother to preach. So at this time, I very proudly bring my brother, Bryce Grant, to bring the Word of God to you guys. Would you give some of that to the Lord? I remember before we were in church, Carl. It makes you so thankful for everything God does for you. Some of you don't know, and thank God you don't know, but life outside of church isn't nearly anything that it is here. Better is one day. Absolutely. I'd like to open in Psalms chapter 81. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. But my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would none of me. You may be seated. I found it interesting that my grandpa preached about Israel and how Israel is a type of the church, the New Testament church. And that's actually right along the line of my notes. I'm just going to continue along, though, because I prayed about it and I feel the same thing. So, Israel is in bondage. Egypt is representation of the world. And Moses comes to free the Israelites after the burning bush experience with God. Through that situation, the devil sends the plague of frogs. The dust of the earth, he smites the dust of the earth and it becomes lice. That's in Exodus 8:17. He all these plagues take place. And finally, later on, I'm skipping through some of this, but later on, Pharaoh releases the Israelites into the hand of Moses. And later on, he ends up regretting this. And so he follows them and follows after them with 600 chariots, I believe. And so now the Israelites they've gone through lots of miracles, the plagues, the pillar of fire guiding them, and the cloud of smoke that blinded the Pharaoh's army behind them. And they continue on, and they get to this point where it's Exodus 14, 11, and 12. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for better it was for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. Their faith, immediately shaken by one of the first trials that they reached. And they turn back to Moses and say it was better for us in slavery, in the bondage that we were in, because they see the present thing that came up as a snare to trap them. And they didn't believe and they didn't have faith in God. What ended up happening, Moses ends up raising his staff and divides the water, and they walk across on dry land. And then Pharaoh's army follows behind, and he raises his staff again, and they drowned. That's representation of our past, coming from the world, drowning through baptism, water baptism. But what has really shaken me up, and this has been on my heart so strongly in the past month, was where does Israel come up with being freed from slavery, working out in the blistering hot sun? Where do they get off in their mindset thinking back after everything God has done for them? We had it better before. And Israel is a type of the New Testament church. How many times have we been in church saying it was better for us before? Why don't I just go back? Why don't I just go back to the same bondage? You can be backslidden in the church. You can find the path, you can find the group of people that aren't on fire for God, and you can fall back on that all. And you can be in that place of complacency. And God can free you out of that in church, all in church, and you can say, with whatever new friends you grab, whatever new people you start hanging out with, you can end up saying, oh man, this is so much junk. I didn't have to deal with this before. And you can, in your mind, turn back to Egypt while staying in the church. And go back to all the old things that God freed you back out of. In Exodus 32, verses 1 through 4, and the Lord said unto Moses, depart and go up hence, thou and the people which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swear unto Abraham. Wait, hold on. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong chapter. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. And Aaron said unto them, break off the golden earrings which are in your ears, in the ears of your wives, and of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand, and fashioned it with a graving tool, after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, these be the gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And we'll go to 7 and 9. And the Lord said unto Moses, go get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I have commanded them. They made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, these be the gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. We see, like, throughout the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, Israel is constantly turning away from God. He offers the prophets speak words of turning themselves back. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, then will I hear from heaven and will restore their land. There's constant hope for Israel, but they're constantly turning away from the path that God had for them. And what kept sticking in my mind was, why in the world, how in the world can that happen? How can you go from having so much promise, so much hope, to throwing it all away? And for what? We're going to go to Hosea too, and I'm going to get through these scriptures. Hosea was God's way of showing the Israelites what it was like for him, because he called Israel the bride of Christ, his bride. That's why a lot of times when you see them turning to other worship of calves and of the other images, it's called adultery, because it's like his wife. Well, anyways, or whoring. Have you heard whoring after false gods? That's why those are in the Bible. It's what he's referring to. But we're going to go to Hosea. He ended up having to marry Gomer under the direction and leadership of God. And in 1:3, so he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And then we go, he ends up marrying Gomer, and we go from this marriage where they were fine together, and she starts looking after other lovers, and like immediately after, like two chapters or two scriptures after. And it's assumed Hosea was a minister, a man of God. It's assumed that Gomer started taking and maybe resenting Hosea's ministry because she was falling out of love with him in some sort. And he was obviously a minister, a man of God. And when the interests aren't there anymore, so she's not loving what he's doing for God, her love for God and everything, she's backing away from all of that. And then they're losing what they had in common together. So she ends up having two other kids with two other lovers. That's in verse 6. And she conceived again and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, call her name Luraima, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. And then in verse 9, then said God, call his name Lamai, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. Well, I'm going to just kind of summarize what happens in the story rather than reading through it all. But what ends up happening in the story is Hosea goes away. She finds a lover and she ends up leaving him completely. He says, for thy lovers gave me all of these possessions. And God says, she doesn't realize it, but her lovers didn't give her those possessions. I gave her those possessions and I'm going to cut her off now. And so she gets cut off from all of the possessions of her lovers, and she ends up in a bad state. A state where she ends up turning back to Gomer. Well, she turns back to him after he comes to buy her, purchase her back, because she was being sold as a slave. It's like constantly Hosea is debating and pleading, and he's in an argument almost with Gomer, like, no, you don't want this, stay with me. But she goes away. And God has a scripture. And Psalms 81:10 is where I actually started. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. This was the start of it. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. But my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would have none of me. Continue. Verse 12, please. So I gave them up into their own hearts' lust. They walked in their own counsels. 13. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me, Israel had walked in my ways. I should soon have subdued the enemies and turned my hand against their adversaries. The haters of the Lord should have submitted themselves unto him, but their time should have endured forever. He should have fed them also with the finest of the wheat, and with the honey out of the rock should I have satisfied thee. So this is what Israel ends up leaving when she turned away from God. And now I go through and I try to think of why it happened, why they would do such things. They forgot quickly of the miracles and the blessings that God had done for them. They had forgotten how horrible Egypt was. And when you remember back into your past, into the bad things of your past, you're always going to remember it better almost until you actually have a reality check. But the whole thing that confused me was why this was possible for this to happen. And I'm going to go to Samuel now. Because David, I love the way that David puts you. I love the way he words things, and he can just really put you in the situation. 12. This is where David ends up. He hears the story of the person with the one little sheep. And the man loved the one little sheep, and he held him in his bosom. And the sheep would sleep with him, and he'd feed them. And he had one sheep. He was a poorer man. And a rich man ended up taking his sheep and dressed it for his own self. And David says, "Who is this man?" David, Samuel, chapter verse 5, yeah. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, "As the Lord liveth, that man that has done this thing shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity." And Nathan said to David, "Thou art the man. Thus saith the Lord of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul, and I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives into thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee such and such things." And in my translation, in my mind, the thing I think of, if that had not been enough, I would have given you so much more. But it still would not have been enough. Why? David ended up taking for granted the things that God had put in his life. It wasn't good enough for him anymore. And so he looked onto what he couldn't have or what he shouldn't have, and he wanted that instead. And it ended up causing him a lot of grief for his family. And you look at Israel, what was it? They took for granted everything that God had did for them or done for them. And you think of the God, our Creator, who has done so much for us, given us so much promise, given us a great church, a great pastor, a great youth leader, great musicians, great singers, great song leaders, and people turn away from it. Why? All this he has for us and so much more. But is it enough for you truly? With their lips they honor me, but their heart is far from me. And I understand our church. I understand we have great worship. We have great services. We have anointed worship. We have people changing their lives here all the time. We have that, and I love that. But there's so much more. And I've been in prayer. I felt this uneasiness about me. I didn't know what it was, but it's like something, it's time for something to change, and I have no clue what it is. What's going on? It's like I'm dissatisfied, not because I don't love God. I pray every day. I love God. But for some reason, there's this dissatisfied thing in me that we're not getting it. We're not fully understanding what God has to offer for us. And now I look back at the mentality. I figured out what God was trying to do to me. He was showing me the mentality he had towards Israel. I would have done everything I promised I'd do. I would take them, I'd restore them, and I'd give them all the promises that they wanted, and so much more. I would have done so many things for them. And in my mind, I'm thinking, God, why are you showing me this? What's going on here? Andrew, you can come up here. What's going on here? Why are you showing me all of this? And God spoke to me, and he said, "The thing that's keeping the visions and the dreams from this church happening is not me withholding myself from them, but them withholding themselves from me. They may not say it with their lips, but for some reason there's things inside of them that they don't want to give up." And me in my mind, I think now, and it's like, we have such a structured mindset, such a structured way of thinking about things. This is church service right now. We sit back here, and that's fine. But have you ever been in a church service where preaching was going on and people were running all over the place? Have you ever been in a church service where it was still preaching and people were coming up to the front crying? In the middle of the service, God was moving amongst his people. And God saying, "I want that for my church. I want a church that's hungry for me. I want a church that's in love with me." God should never, ever feel like he's not good enough for his people. But we show him by our actions. constantly trying to move to the next phase of things. You guys going to Culver's? And I love fellowship. We should go to Culver's. But where's the point where we're like, okay, today it's not going to happen. Today we're going to stay here and we're going to seek God's face. And we're going to see the changes that people are proclaiming will happen. Because there's a difference that's going to happen. We're on the brink, on the threshold of things. And the mindset of Israel was, when everything started going right and everything was going good, they turned back. And in our New Testament church, we still have that same type mentality that creeps its way in. Where we see ourselves walking forward in such promise and we start to die off and drift back from what God has. All this I had for you, and so much more. You wouldn't believe the spirit you'd feel in this place if you just let go and let me do what I had planned. Let go of your mindset that's holding you back of how church ought to be and just let go and seek the face of God. Be the change you wish to see. Who's going to be the first one to step out and say it's going to be different? Right now, who's going to be the first to be the one who says it's going to be different? I want to see what God has for me. Draw nigh unto me, and I will draw nigh unto you. It's a promise. And if you think we've reached the furthest stage, we're not even close. God has so much more to offer in this place. Holy, 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 holy